It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is a special edition today after, I guess, what was some sort of a scrimmage last night. Fortunately, now I watched it on TV. Ed Werder was there.
I'm not sure which was worse.
We have both been invited into all the interviews that are happening. Ed is one of the handful of reporters that has been allowed to be at practice, and Ed will bring us some of that up front. We wanted to start today, though, by giving you an update on our good buddy, Mark Frito Friedman. And, of course, it's Frito Nation Productions, where we're usually emanating from. Frito has had a really bad medical situation and is really kind of fighting it. And he has been now for a couple of weeks. And it's a scary situation, and we won't get too far into it, but just say he's going to need your prayers. And I would hope that perhaps, Ed, this podcast playing in his room, perhaps it'll bring a smile to his face. For people that have known Frito and listened to him in the past on the radio, he's a longtime radio personality. You heard him with Norm Hitzkus for years, then you heard him with us at 103.3. It is some form of pneumonia that has really affected a lot of his organs, and he is on a ventilator. The next thing they're trying to do is get him off that ventilator. So, Ed, we love working with Frito. He's been out with us in California to training camp before. He's a great friend. He's a lot of fun. And we just, I think all our listeners and all his fans join with us in thinking about him. And it could be a long road, but he's got a lot of fight in him, and we're hoping for all the best.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that. What was it, less than 3 weeks ago, we were in his studio recording our podcast, as we always do, and 3 or 4 days later, he was in a hospital, and now he's in a very serious situation, fighting for his life to a certain extent. And it seems odd not to have him here, because one of the things that gave me great reassurance when you and I would be debating about something and I would go on the soliloquy or filibuster, whatever you want to call it, is that out of the corner of my eye, I could see Frito nodding in affirmation. So I felt like, okay, I must be making a point that at least one person listening to our podcast will agree with. So I'll miss that and a lot more about not having Frito with us.
All right. And we're very appreciative. It's Frito's great friends with Ted Price and the guys at Vocal, and they got beautiful studios. And so during this time, they are kind of helping us out. And it's just kind of unique that they have that great relationship with Frito, and they're there for us, and they're very gracious, and will turn us right back over to Frito when he's well enough to continue.
And they did offer to allow us to use video. We could have videotaped this podcast. I guess we would have if you'd worn a nicer shirt.
I'm going to wear a tie next time. We are going to utilize video. We have a YouTube channel. I think Frito sometimes takes pictures of us. Remember, we had a green screen out there for a little while. Love what they have here. So we may do some video, because Ed is used to being on screen. Although I'm not really screen friendly. I'm more of a dyed-in-the-wool radio guy. So real quick, Ed, I almost called you Steven because that's my radio producer. So cool to see in the Dallas Morning News that special section they did, and they went back and sort of honored all these teams of the past. And one of those Super Bowls, I think it was the last Super Bowl win, you wrote the lead story for it, and it was reprinted in the Morning News in a kind of a special little, I don't know, 30-page.
I'd forgotten how really well written that was until I read through
it.
Thought
it was a little wordy, yeah.
No, it was, you know, every year they do a football, what we used to call a football tab in the business, right? Special section. This one was particularly unique because it was celebrating 60 years of Cowboys football. And it was really slickly produced, and I was not forewarned that they were reprinting my article.
Yeah, you deserve some royalties off of that.
I was certainly should get a T-shirt out of it or something like that. I guess Damon Marks was responsible for putting this together, and they did a fantastic job. Although I don't understand why they used two of Kalishaw's game stories from Super Bowls. I think they were really columns, quite honestly, because I don't believe after the first one he was really the beat writer anymore. I think I was more in charge of that, but it was great to be a part of that special publication and to have that and read through that. And It was the one, you know, where Barry Switzer was the winning coach at the Super Bowl after a long and tumultuous season of internal strife that almost derailed that great team earlier than it already was derailed. and now, right. Now they're still trying to get back to that, you know, and that's what last night was about.
Yeah, last night we remember what used to be termed as like the blue-white scrimmage. And I guess they did have blue and white jerseys out there. To fans that tuned in last night, and I'm not a
fan.
Boy,
are they angry.
Yeah, there was anger, and I get it. I get it, because to me, it was going to be my first glimpse. Now, I've been told, Ed, that I'll be able to join you out there at some point.
Okay.
Wow. Jeez. I'm glad you're social distance from me.
Always.
Our buddy Jay, he'll have to take care of that. Mosley, editing Mosley sneezes. That comes with the territory. All right, but yeah, I'm hoping to join you out there. But you put your eyes on this team. Let's just talk about last night, though. Kind of an interesting choice. You just mentioned it. The reason fans were upset is because anytime they put a scrimmage or a practice on TV, you're not tuning in. I mean, you'll listen to Jerry or some of this other stuff. That's fine. But you're mainly wanting to see some of the scrimmage, some of the practice. Oh, this is our first chance to see this team and the way they handled it. It's not their fault. They were given marching orders. But it was very, very frustrating to anybody watching that at home because it was all sideline shots. And if they showed anything on the field, it was like they would just zero in on, here's the tight end, here's Blake Jarwin, and you could like not see the rest of the line. They went to great pains to not let any other teams see right. what they were putting on out there.
Well, and I think the fact that, you know, the so-called Cowboys night at AT&T Stadium last night, which was heavily hyped by the Cowboys TV production people as far as, you know, creating this perception among the fans that this is going to be your first chance to see this team. Normally, you know, they have public practices, and they haven't allowed that. And because they haven't had public practices, they haven't allowed people covering the team during practice to even live tweet, even significant injuries like when Gerald McCoy got hurt, you know, 2 weeks ago. Nobody could live tweet that until after the practice was over. And so for people then to tune in and not have that opportunity, I think, was really frustrating. And I'd like to know how long it took Mike McCarthy to convince Jerry that that was a bad idea. But the fact that he did prevail, that there was no all 22 film, there were no names on the jerseys, there were no numbers on the jerseys, you know, it was an entire group of players to be named later. I think it's a great thing for people who think that this ought to be more of a football operation and less of an entertainment enterprise. And I thought last night demonstrated the influence that Mike McCarthy, or the benefit of the doubt Jerry's giving Mike McCarthy, right? It's not the first example, but it's a pretty significant example because I don't think that's what Jerry envisioned, right? That's not the perception the team created in the public for tuning into our channel and watching this. You're not going to spend an hour and a half listening to Michael Irvin and Nate Newton and Bill Jones just talk about something you don't see, right? And I mean, I don't know how you could do enough preparation to do that broadcast justice because it's hard to tell who anybody is. But Mike McCarthy said he got the idea because he wanted to be able to protect the players who are at the end of the roster, the players who are likely to be cut on this coming Saturday, so that the Cowboys can reassemble some of those players when the roster expansion is allowed and they can assign their 16 practice squad players, you know, on Sunday. And so he doesn't want teams around the league to see who these young players are. And I understand his point of view, right? It's smart from a football point of view. He said he got the idea from, you know, he grew up in Pittsburgh, and this was something Chuck Knoll did all the time with the Steelers. They never wore names and numbers on their jerseys during training camp. And one of the reasons was Chuck Knoll wanted his assistants to be able to discern who was who based on their athleticism and their mannerisms. And Mike mentioned that last night after the scrimmage as well. But there are also other advantages to it. You know, it forces the coaches to look sort of more objectively at their players. They don't really know instantaneously who they are, so you're judging and evaluating without prejudice. And if somebody did happen to sneak in and get a recording device in there, as some people are alleged to have done in this league at times, then it's of little or no value.
Yeah, I don't know who's ever been accused of something like that. I don't know who you might have in mind. But Ed, now where was your, so take us inside for all of us who are sort of frustrated. You made a good point. It was the team's fault for, we're going to be on Channel 21. It's going to be on the team website. Your first look at this team, if you build that up and then you don't show them anything, that's frustrating. And I saw some of my buddies, I'm not going to mention their names, I like them, but some of the Cowboys.com people were snapping back at the fans. Don't snap back. Those are your people. Those are the people who come onto your site. Don't tell them, don't put little things up them whining.
And I don't think they were deliberately misleading and, you know, over-promoting this event. I think they went in last night believing that they were going to show the full scrimmage, and at some point they were informed that that was not going to happen by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, last night would have been a summertime football TV spectacle if Jerry Jones had his way.
Yes.
And Mike McCarthy made it the exact opposite.
Yeah. Well, and your point is well taken. Is this a sign that that Jerry Jones has, you know, given up some of that power? And what we know, if Jason Garrett were still here, we would have seen every play of that thing. I mean, that's just the way, you know, and maybe that's unfair, but that's just the way it is. So interesting feedback on what you said about Pittsburgh and Chuck Noll, and isn't that interesting, that sort of influence. And, boy, he does have that persona, doesn't he, that Pittsburgh way about him, McCarthy. I mean, just kind of the way he, I don't know, the way he looks, everything
his
about him
language,
out there.
Yeah, he's all football coach. I mean, I thought it was really compelling as a guy who's, you know, covered the team since 1989 and, you know, obviously you had a very up-close look at the fractured partnership between Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson, ended their partnership way too soon, and put this franchise in a position where they'll never win as many Super Bowls as they should have won, regardless of how many they might win from this point forward. Mike McCarthy at one point, I'm looking at him and he's standing there on the field by himself, you know, dressed in coaching garb with a whistle in his mouth. And then there's Jerry, but he's not on the field. He's upstairs and he's holding a TV microphone doing an interview on, you know, his own channel. And isn't that the way it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to be. The owner's supposed to be in the box and off the field, and the coach is supposed to be holding the whistle and controlling the game, the elements on the field. And that's what we saw last night. And I said that is the most recent example of the benefit of the doubt that Jerry's giving McCarthy. I think the best two examples are the fact that Jason Witten is no longer a Cowboy and he's being forced to finish his career with the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't think that ever would have happened had that decision been left to Jerry, given his personal regard for Witten and what he's accomplished in a Cowboys uniform. And then I think the other more recent example from a personnel standpoint is they haven't yet signed Earl Thomas. And obviously the safety position has been something of a concern even going into camp. I don't think they've resolved anything back there at this point. Maybe it's even worse now with Xavier Woods walking off with a groin pull last night, the extent of which we don't know. Mike McCarthy downplayed it afterward in terms of its significance, but I mean, and they haven't counted themselves out on Earl Thomas, but I think there's no doubt that when Earl Thomas got released, Jerry Jones would have signed him almost immediately because he saw him as a guy who's been a Hall of Fame player for almost his entire career. And a guy who's publicly demonstrated he wants to wear the star on his helmet desperately.
Yeah.
And has gone through unusual means to try to make that happen, including going up to Jason Garrett as he's walking in the locker room and saying, come get me. And given the discount that the Cowboys could get in terms of a contract on him, the fact that he's not here, I think, also speaks to McCarthy, who said, you know, to me, the biggest thing when you're bringing in a veteran player is what's the fit in the locker room? And he's saying this about a guy who just lost his position in Baltimore because of conduct detrimental to the team.
Yeah.
So he's making it clear he does not want that element in his locker room. And as of right now, it's not there.
And it was funny when it was reported that the Cowboys were out on Earl Thomas. Jerry quickly said that reporter doesn't know anything. He didn't like it being reported. Maybe even if there was some truth to it.
Well, it even made it clear, right? He went out of his way to say, I make that decision.
Yes.
Because he loves that. Like, that's his thing, is whatever decisions are made and whoever you think makes them, actually, I make all of those final decisions. But as of now, he's made the final, maybe not final, but he's made the determination that at the moment they don't need Earl Thomas.
Right. And I, the one thing Jerry may have won on in what doesn't really seem like a power struggle, but the he did get to leave Kellen Moore as the play caller. And I think that surprised both of us that a man who had been a play caller, and that's kind of what you're bringing him in to do as far as like running the offense, bringing more, you know, ingenuity, all those kinds of things in the Super Bowl pedigree that he is, and saying, no, Kellen Moore's going to call plays. Now, who knows? Maybe McCarthy did ask around and was very impressed with this young man, and so he'll continue to.
I think that is a demonstration of the leverage Jerry had over McCarthy when he was hired. You know, I think he recognized this was the best job available in football.
Yeah.
The head coach of the Cowboys. He had spent a year out after being let go by Green Bay. And he knew that at best he was the backup for the Giants job and for the Carolina Panthers job. And here he is sitting there for hours on end impressing Jerry Jones. And if at that point Jerry said, look, I'll hire you, but Kellen Moore is the play caller. I like Kellen Moore. I like his potential. And then I think that's what prevailed. Jerry had the leverage at that point. And you know what? I think it winds up being a good thing. I mean, given the condensed offseason, really the elimination of the offseason, no preseason games.
Some of the carryover.
You know, all of the things that, and Mike mentioned this last night, all of the advantages he was supposed to have as a first-year coach that went away because of this pandemic. And so he's going to be overly protective of the things he can prevent opponents from knowing about. Until he puts his team on the field. But so I think that was a big part of it. Now, if the offense doesn't perform well, I could certainly see Mike becoming more involved and eventually maybe attempting to take it over again.
Yeah.
Because he said in Green Bay,
right.
You know, for 13 years, he called plays all but one year, and he didn't even make it all the way through that year before he took back the play calling
that
responsibility.
That will always be in our minds. Let's ruin things for Mike McCarthy right now, because I want you to reveal sort of everything you've seen, and they've been very big on do not reveal personnel groupings and all that, but that's no big deal. We can work around that. Start last night, though, Ed. You mentioned the groin injury. There was another injury to a wide receiver.
Ventrell Bryant.
Yes, that did not look good from what we were hearing. Ed, did anything about last night? And were you able to kind of, had you seen enough practices, Ed? And of course, when you were kind of trying to identify guys just sort of by their bodies, were you a pretty good scout? Did you see the way a certain guy was moving and go, that's Amari? Or did you kind of say, oh, that's CD. Look at how sleek and look how quick he is.
Tell him more by the hair hanging out from under his helmet.
Okay. Although one of those touchdowns was that I did get a peek at on some footage was, I think Noah Brown made it. And I was trying to do the same thing you're doing. I saw some hair coming out of there, and I thought, well, that's got to be, CD. But I think that was maybe Noah.
It was at the end,
in
the two-minute drill.
What were your biggest takeaways from last night?
Well, my biggest takeaway from last night, and including what the practice, five or six other practices I've seen out at the Star, are that this is a team that last year got nothing out of its rookies, right? I think they got one start from a rookie. They got fewer plays than anybody in the NFL from rookie contributors. That's not going to be the case this year. First of all, the guy you mentioned, CeeDee Lamb, is going to be entirely deserving of that number 88 jersey if everything we've seen so far carries over into the season. And I think the same of Trayvon Diggs. I think he's going to be a starting corner, or at least the nickel corner, from week one on. And both of them have, in my opinion, earned that playing time based on what I've seen compared to the guys they're competing against. Obviously, Diggs is getting a huge opportunity to run with the number ones. Oh, we're not allowed to say that. I forgot. He's running with the richest group of defensive players.
We'll clean that up.
Take that out like your sneeze.
Yes,
if you would.
Yes.
But he's, with the injuries to Wouzier Jordan Lewis, who's been out for a significant period of time and has proven to be one of the few playmakers they have in the secondary. But Diggs is a really impressive guy in the way that he can run. He plays the ball in the air like he's a receiver, which he was until he went to Alabama. the coaches at Alabama did not give him a very high endorsement, which is unusual. Nick Saban usually loves his players and speaks very highly of them to NFL teams. He was not given that. And so you wonder, you know, how, what aspects of his personality or his game or his commitment to practice, because we heard about this with Tristan Hill, you know, last year from Randy Shannon, who coached him at University of Central Florida, played out exactly like he said it would, which was the guy doesn't practice hard, and that's why he didn't start but one game his senior year. I think he's going to be a terrific player. And, I mean, he's got length, he's athletic, he does not seem at all to be, you know, intimidated by going up against the Cowboys' three best receivers. He's taken plenty of reps against them.
Does it, like, shock you when you see him pick off passes, like Cowboys' defensive backs actually
catch? Yeah, I don't know what that, catch. Are they allowed to do that? I think the Cowboys had the fewest interceptions, tied for the fewest interceptions in the league last year with 7, and it tied the franchise low in history. 60 years they've been playing football. They've never had fewer interceptions than they had last year. So that's a big area of emphasis from Mike Nolan. And CeeDee Lamb, I mean, the guy is unbelievable. He, to me, you know, Mike McCarthy plays a lot of three wide receivers, so I think they're going to be an 11 personnel all the time, three wides. I believe in his last couple years in Green Bay, only the Rams played more 11 personnel than Mike McCarthy's Packers did. And so he likes having three receivers on the field. And to best use their offensive personnel, I think they're going to have three receivers on the field most of the time. And CeeDee Lamb is entirely worthy of that. I mean, he is so quick. He creates separation. He can be used in the slot. I think they're confident with him playing any of the four receiver positions in their offense already, even though he's been very limited in his exposure to it this offseason. I think he's going to make a lot of big plays. He's really quick. He's very smooth. And I just think there were, you know, you look back at last year, was wide receiver one of their biggest needs? You would probably say no. But you look back at last year and the games that cost them at the end of the year were, there were 4 road games where Dak Prescott did not throw a touchdown pass last year. And they lost all 4 of those games. And toward the end of the season, you know, Amari Cooper got shut down when they played against good defenses and against the best corners. And now I don't see that happening. Dak's going to have somewhere to go with the football, no matter if the Rams assign, you know, Jalen Ramsey week 1 to Amari Cooper. Dak's going to have somewhere to go with the football. The biggest concern to me with Mike McCarthy and his offense is, I've always thought Ezekiel Elliott was the best player on the offensive side of the ball, and is he going to get enough opportunities in this offense with Mike McCarthy, who has never been known for running the football?
All right, yeah, I want to get back to Zeke, and I got a tied in question for you. We want to hear this special message first, though. All right, Ed, you mentioned Zeke, and I want to, I'll do the tied in first, and we'll get back to Zeke. Jarwin is supposed to be the Witten. He's supposed to replace Witten, and he's obviously been a playmaker. He showed some playmaking tendencies last year, and he's supposed to be the lead dog. Also, and I thought, you know, I didn't think I would hear this. There's a couple things that have happened in this camp. I've heard sort of negative things, and of course, you've put your eyes on this team at least about 5 times, I think you had it at. We'll check the tape on that, Ed, get an exact number out to our folks. But Clinton Dix, I've heard negative reviews, okay? And then Dalton Schultz, someone I had kind of dismissed a little bit as like, I'm afraid that ended up being a little bit of a nothing pick, suddenly showing up, snagging some balls. Now, again, we can't really say anything until we see it during the season. Are you seeing anything from that young man, that tight end in the tight end group, and Blake Jarwin? How's that group looking? Because I keep hearing McCarthy brag on them.
Well, I think Dalton Schultz, who's a former draft pick, is competing with Blake Bell to be the second tight end. Both of them are more renowned.
Former Sooners great, Blake Bell.
With the Chiefs, right?
Yes, and with the Chiefs, but he was known for the Bell Dozer.
Oh, there you go. Blocking tight end.
Well, he was the quarterback, former Oklahoma quarterback, so he would come in around and be the goal line quarterback, and they called it the Bell Dozer.
Okay, well, there you go. We'll look forward to that play. I haven't seen it yet in practice, okay. But I think those two guys are more, you know, the prototypical inline blocking type tight end, and maybe, you know, you can throw them a quick pass over the middle if you're getting pressure. And they're not going to do a lot with the football afterwards. So I haven't been overly impressed with them. I will say that in the practices that I've watched, Blake Jarwin has performed well. He's obviously a very athletic guy, a much better receiver than he is the blocking element of the game at that position. He seems to be have a feel, you know, it's such a nuanced position to feel where the coverage is and be able to have the quarterback locate you in the proper position. I think he does that pretty well. And I've seen a lot of throws to Blake Jarwin in the practices so far. And he's caught a high percentage of the footballs, and he does something with it after the catch. But I don't know that he's going to be Jason Witten at the top of his game. But Mike McCarthy has always wanted to have a tight end. Even in Green Bay, he wanted to have a tight end that he could use to control the middle of the field. And with the exception of a brief period of time where JerMichael Finley was that guy, he never really had it. And so I think Blake Jarwin's an interesting guy to watch because you'll effectively have four receivers on the field when you have three. And you know, Zeke said that he spent his offseason working on being a route runner, not just catching, you know, dump off passes out of the backfield, but actually running routes out of the slot and other positions is something that he's trying to become more accomplished at. So they have a lot of interesting variables in their offense now.
All right. Yeah, I was looking back at some of those numbers. You know, you're always a good numbers man, and ESPN Stats and Info helps in that. But some of those, the Cowboys brought up, oh, we could have 3,000-yard receivers. And your cynical mind immediately turned toward, well, what's that mean for Zeke? And then you'll recall Zeke reacted on Twitter to whatever you said.
Don't start this.
Yeah, poop. He did the poop
flaming
emoji.
Poop. Yeah. A flaming poop.
And I think you responded, Zeke, I'm trying to get you some more
carries. I'm on your side here, Zeke. Trying to let you justify being the highest paid running back in football.
It was remarkable, though. Like, he's not going to be Marshall Faulk, but it is crazy to look back at some of those teams and some of the insane numbers. And again, they're going to have a lot of – it's a good problem to have, I guess, but the Cowboys have not always handled good problems that well in the sense that, like, Tony Pollard is a nice – gives you a nice little – some juice, and he's got
excellent.
Some speed. Yeah, but they forget about players like that sometimes.
Well, I think the previous staff tended to forget about those players, especially when they were young. I don't think Jason Garrett trusted young players very often. Mike McCarthy comes from a culture in Green Bay where he almost had to because, you know, the whole staff up there was always frustrated that Ted Thompson, the general manager, didn't engage in free agency for the most part. And so they got themselves in a position where they had to play their draft picks early because that's all they had. And so whenever they lost a player in free agency, they didn't replace him as a free agent. They had to draft the guy to replace that player. And so they wound up playing guys early. And so I think Mike doesn't have the same aversion to that the Jason Garrett coaching staff did. And as it pertains to the running game, you know, obviously Garrett had a certain style of offense. I mean, he built the team around the offensive line, and then they drafted a running back in Zeke Elliott fourth overall as kind of the finishing piece to that. And they wanted to be able to impose their will and physically dominate teams. That's really not what they did last year, though. But they were forced into that position because their special teams were horrible. They had terrible starting field position. They were behind in games early. And they were forced to throw in a way that was not productive if you're trying to win the game. But I do think Mike has to dispel this perception that he wants everything to run through the quarterback. I mean, he had Brett Favre and he had Aaron Rodgers, and they're both going to be in the Hall of Fame. And he won one Super Bowl with those quarterbacks, that being Rodgers. And that's the criticism of McCarthy. And one of the ways he got there is he relied too much on his quarterback. For example, in Mike McCarthy's 13 years in Green Bay, the Packers never ranked among the top 10 in the league in rushing attempts. And since 2016, Ezekiel Elliott has had more touches than anybody in football. And so there's the rub to me. And, you know, he often would when I would go to Green Bay, he'd often tell me how much he valued the running game and the importance it played in protecting Aaron Rodgers and having balance. But it really didn't ever seem to carry over into his play calling. In fact, I remember, I think this is a great anecdote, from 2016, I went up there to cover. The Cowboys were playing there in 2016. And so that was Dak and Zeke's rookie year. And the Packers held their final practice on Saturday. I went up. I met with McCarthy alone to talk about the game and the matchups. And obviously Zeke was off to a great start as a rookie and would win the rushing title that year. And so before that game, I was talking to Mike about what his thoughts on Zeke. And he said, I was just talking to Eddie Lacy this morning, his running back with Green Bay. Looking at the rushing attempts, the guy in Dallas, he said, he said the guy in Dallas has twice as many carries as you. You need to talk to the guy calling plays. He laughed, and I laughed, and Eddie Lacy laughed, the same reaction, because McCarthy didn't run the football. And so Eddie Lacy thinks, hey, the reason Zeke Elliott's leading the league in rushing is because he's got twice as many attempts as I do. And McCarthy's laughing at, yeah, you got a point there. Yeah. That's a valid point. But he's got to prove to me nothing in his mind. But I want to see him, how he uses Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah. I think that's an interesting part of this transition.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't blame him totally. Eddie Lacy, as I recall, was overweight for much of his career.
He was.
Eddie kind of let himself go a little bit.
Some people said the same thing about Zeke last year after the holdout. You know, he didn't have the 20-yard run, the long runs last year. He was carrying a little bit too much weight. I think Steven told us that when he came back from his suspension was the same thing. So
through the eye, does he look thin, fast, all the things? Yeah,
I think he looks solid. I mean,
yeah.
He also is, you know, he wants to win. I think that's the best thing about him. I don't know that I know Dak's a super competitive guy. But I think there's nobody I'd trust more when it comes to winning a game than Zeke Elliott.
Do you miss the music out there? He's not playing as much music, because there's not going to be that much fan noise and everything.
They played it last night, though. They used the manufactured crowd noise last night for that very purpose. Mike said he doesn't like the fake crowd noise, but he recognizes the league is going to mandate that it be used for the purposes of the television audience and creating the right atmosphere for the viewer. That's going to happen. And so they did work with that in mind some last night.
They said last night was the loudest AT&T Stadium's ever been.
It was the most. It's just so, you know, it's so surreal that you're going to this event that normally would attract a lot of fans. And Jerry had indicated in the 10 days or so leading up that they were considering allowing fans there as kind of a dry run for week two when they're at home. And going through all the protocols and how to seat people and so forth and how to run the concession stands and the parking and all that. And yet they didn't do it, which I think is, again, Mike McCarthy's doing more than anybody else's.
Jerry is living in denial. I mean, on a lot of things, I think. I mean, like the start of the fans thing. He's just I mean, we're going to get to September 20th and he's going to have to. I mean, there's going to have to be a decision in place. And I don't know. I mean, I think Jerry loves to promise things to the fans. Going to have this TV show. Got a big TV show. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to show the show the sideline. Going to have some fans. We may have this thing half full. I got air conditioning. I can open the deals. He loves stuff like that. He's their ultimate ringmaster.
3 million square foot stadium. Unique airflow through it.
Did you feel the unique airflow last night?
No, I was in the press box. I was in the press box. But, you know, so you get there. The parking lot's empty. You walk through. You get screened. Temperature screened on your way in. You had to fill out this whole questionnaire online. And have that, you know, then you got a QC code on your phone that you put up there so they could recognize, you know, who it was.
There's no way I could have done this. Is it people don't know me? Yeah,
really?
That's right.
Anyway, then we get in the press box. Hey, they did have box lunches and little containers of candy for us and everything. And so, I mean, you have internet access, you have air conditioning. Really, who's to complain about the fact you can't identify any of the players?
Oh, man. I hope the fans get to be in there, but we got to be safe. Steve, I'll say this, Ed. The high school stadiums, they started, you know, Texas high school football.
I saw some pictures.
4A and under. Although I'm kind of tired of all the social distancing shaming. At some point, I mean, people are going to do what they do in these communities, and I don't know if you and I sitting on our Twitter calling them out and making fun of them is going to do any good. I don't know. I'm a little bit tired of all this, as we all are. But
I found that in my history, people react to my Twitter posts exactly as I'd like them to.
Is that right?
Almost without fail.
That's right. Yes. You see.
Hashtag sarcasm.
You always land there. As you see, I had a joke yesterday, and I finally, for the first time in a while, because I thought some people are going to think this is real. I mean, I said, I had a joke. I was just going to put Cowboys have asked fans not. Well, it was before I knew they were only going to show the sideline. I said, Cowboys have asked fans not to live tweet tonight's televised scrimmage. But then I just thought somebody will run with this. Like one time, Bleacher Report or whoever
I saw that.
Just
I remember
ran
that.
With it. And so in parentheses, I go, we're just having fun here. You know,
you have
like
to do
to
that.
Try
you have to alert people.
I hate that. I don't like doing that. All right. I got a question about a few players, if you don't mind, since you've had your eyes on these guys.
Okay.
Defensively, Everson Griffin, want to know how he looks. He's a new arrival, has only had a few practices now. And then Alden Smith, now that there's been about 10 or 11 of these practices, and which you said you've seen about half of them, what does is he... you know, better than you expected, more impressive, quick off the ball. What are we seeing from him?
Yeah, I think the defensive line, which, you know, during up until the draft, I would have been concerned about that if I was the Cowboys, given that they lost Robert Quinn in free agency, who was their, you know, leader in sacks and quarterback pressures both last year. But the group that they've put together is pretty impressive. Now, you say that, but you're not really seeing any football, right? You're not seeing them get blocked in pass rushing team situations. You know, Tyron Smith and Lael Collins haven't been out there, and so they're rushing against backups who might not even make the team and might not play a game, and certainly won't play a game if the Cowboys are fortunate. And so they all look good that way. But I think if you look at what Everson Griffin has accomplished in the league and the way he's played for the past 10 years in Minnesota, I think you feel pretty confident that you've got a really good player at that position, opposite Tank Lawrence. And then if you Alden Smith, I mean I think you have to be skeptical about Alden Smith until you see otherwise. I would say physically, and I remember covering 49ers games that year when he had 19 and a half sacks and was one of the elite rushers in football. I was struck by his size. He looks taller and thicker, but quick. But again, they're not playing real football. He's not being blocked. He's created a lot of pressures in practice. He's very comfortable playing as a stand-up end. And I think if they can win on first and second down against the run with Donatari Poe and, you know, I don't know, Tristan Hill, I guess, is now one of their top tackles, and Neville Gallimore, who they drafted fourth round from Oklahoma, if they can win on the rundowns or the 50-50 downs and force teams to throw when they know they're going to throw, and they can rush them with DeMarcus Lawrence and Tyrone Crawford and Alden Smith and Everson Griffin, and then maybe blitz Jalen Smith, who's very effective at that, I would expect they're going to be able to create a lot of pressure on the quarterback on third downs in those types of situations. And Griffin looks to me like a guy who hustles all the time, and that's his reputation. Like, I watched him on a play last night where the ball was run away from him, and he ran all the way to the sideline to, you know, thud up or touch or whatever Ezekiel Elliott on a run play away from him. So if you'll hustle in that situation, then I trust you'll hustle in the games.
Now, it's going to be fascinating because we're used to seeing some of these preseason games and working on some things, and a first-year coach would probably enjoy doing some of that. But now he's embracing this secrecy, the code of silence. This almost feels like some old George Allen, Tom Landry stuff from in the past. But this is going to be, I mean, you don't know what could happen when they finally get out there. A couple more players I wanted to throw at you. Do Van Der Esch and Jalen, at least to your eye in these practices, what I keep hearing is they look faster, they remind you more. And, of course, the big thing with Van Der Esch, I think we know the guy could be a really good player. It's going to be, can he stay healthy? Can the neck be okay? Is it going to be structurally sound enough to hold up over 16 games? What are you seeing from those two?
Again, you're not seeing any live tackling, so that's hard to know. But the reason that Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, made the change and put Leighton Van Der Esch in the middle as the Mike linebacker is they think that he's the more physical player of the two. They can both play inside and have, but they like Jalen on the outside, you know, covering tight ends, which in this division is a pretty significant challenge. I think we've seen him get beat in coverage an awful lot because of the terrible injury he suffered at the end of his college career. But obviously they're putting a lot of faith in his health in that regard. And Van Der Esch, now you're asking him to take on, you know, offensive linemen and the fullbacks and inside and be more physical. And, you know, I know he said that he doesn't even think about it anymore, but I find that hard to believe. And there are certainly people in the league who have been concerned about his problems with his neck, and the fact that his second year in the league, he only played a partial season and had to have surgery on his neck is not going to make people feel better about that. And putting him inside, I think, puts him in even more physical jeopardy in that regard. And I think from a communication standpoint, one of the most interesting parts of the season opener against the Rams is that very thing. Like, the Rams, if you remember, beat the Cowboys, rushed for, almost 300 yards against them in that playoff game out there 2 years ago. And one of the things that mystified the Cowboys was the fact that one of the things Sean McVay did was rush Jared Goff to the line of scrimmage, force the Cowboys to declare what they were, how they were going to line up, and then he used a communications device before it cut off to call the play for Jared Goff against a known defense at that point. Well, now they have that same opportunity, and you got a guy on the field making the calls in Leighton Vander Esch for the first time in his NFL career, and you've got a coordinator in Mike Nolan who's making the defensive calls for the first time in a real game situation. So I think that's a big challenge for them on defense. And then you add in the fact that they haven't tackled at all to this point.
Yeah. Tackling could be pretty porous.
I think tackling and special teams breakdowns are going to be interesting to monitor early in the season. And I think the other thing is, you know, the running backs and the receivers haven't been hit. So I think you'll see more fumbles early on as these players, you know, get exposed to actual NFL speed and contact for the first time in 9 months.
Yeah, and the hope will be, now, Ed, interestingly, in Major League Baseball, when they weren't bubbling up as they are in the NBA, they right away there were outbreaks in games. We thought, are they ever going to make it through the season? They seem to have calmed that down a little bit. NFL seems to be doing pretty well in that category. So we'll see when these teams...
I think there's one player on the COVID list right now.
It's pretty amazing. So I don't know. They're doing something right with all the protocols, the testing. Maybe the Omni bubble is working. I kind of got a kick out of the fact that Andy Dalton wouldn't answer that question. Somebody was really after him. He's like, I have a room there. Yeah. Are you staying there? I have a room there. So... we shall see.
But it's impressive that guys like, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence and Dak Prescott, who have homes nearby, kind of led the charge to, let's take this seriously. Let's do what we can to protect ourselves. Now, I think the equation changes once the regular season begins, and that's certainly going to be one of the big fascinating challenges that are a unique part of this NFL season.
Do you think while they're redoing some of that grass field or putting in some new grass out there in Frisco, could they use Dak's backyard? Could everybody just go over there?
Over to Dak's, yeah. I think gatherings of more than 10 is frowned upon, if I remember right.
Yeah, but it's just the team. Yeah, well, you're right. Maybe in neighborhoods or something like that. Ed, along those lines of what's kind of coming up, it'll be interesting with the shooting of the police shooting of Jacob Blake. It threw sports into, that happened last weekend. We had boycotts, last week, the NBA, other sports, NHL took time off. You saw it with Major League Baseball. There's been talk in the NFL, at least a couple of prominent players, would we sit out a game? I don't see it happening in the NFL. There's not the same level, although what happened, with the kneeling and what happened a few years ago was lit a fire on a lot of things. The NFL doesn't strike me. I just don't think players are wired to sit out a game. But the reason I bring all this up, you know, Jerry is still kind of looking, kind of undecided on where he stands and.
Undecided on where he stands. I think he's undecided on how to articulate that.
Yeah, maybe that's it. He does seem like he's softened his stance to a certain extent, although we won't know that until somebody kneels during the anthem out there in Los Angeles.
Which Donatari Poe has expressly said he's going to do. And it's obviously a conversation Jerry is avoiding having for as long as possible with his players because it hasn't happened yet, and we're less than 2 weeks away from the season opener. And I think, you know, there is a lot of pressure on Cowboys players from other teams in the NFL, from other sports leagues, given their visibility, given the fact that their owner was so adamant about his position that he threatened punishment if they didn't, you know, honor the national anthem in the way that he thinks it should be. And, you know, I give Jerry credit for standing his ground. You can say he's an old white guy who just doesn't get it. But, you know, I mean, he believes in what he believes in. And, you know, hopefully he'll educate himself more fully on the whole situation. But what compromise he's willing to reach with his players, I think, is really going to be a fascinating part of the whole thing for week one. I can't imagine that's not going to be a huge theme going into week one. Is so how are the Cowboys going to handle this? And what is Jerry going to allow?
Yeah.
And how is he going to react if somebody takes a knee? No Cowboys player has done that to this point. Now, he articulated his position quite clearly, and I think I've said this before. I've watched Michael Bennett last year, and he never stood toes to the line, you know, helmet and under his arm with his teammates. He was always in the back by the bench, drinking Gatorade, chatting with the security guard back there, or whatever. He paid no attention to the national anthem, and as far as we know, he was never admonished for it, much less publicly punished and denied playing time, as Jerry has threatened. But I think it's an interesting component, and if it gets to the point where there's a lot of friction about it, or players feel that they're being unfairly dictated to in terms of their freedom of expression by their owner, how does that relationship affect their performance on the field?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I kind of had to laugh when Jerry, he wanted to throw that 2017 playbook back out there, kneeling before the anthem.
Cardinal game, yeah.
He brought that up, and you know,
he thinks that's what they should do now.
Yeah, yeah, and I just think obviously the climate in this country has changed in an enormous way even since then, and so
I think the other thing, like, back then, you're right about that. I mean, it was really the NFL against, you know, Trump at a certain point. And Jerry said what he said and threatened the punishment. And whether he would have followed through with it or not, we don't know. But we know he wasn't tested. And part of the reason I think he wasn't tested were his most prominent players were young guys. Like Dak Prescott was, you know, a second-year player. Zeke Elliott was a second-year player. Well, they're pretty established now, right? They're both being paid at the high end of the running back and quarterback charts. They're proven NFL players, and I'm sure they feel, especially Dak. I mean, you know, he made a $1 million commitment to creating social equality and social justice, you know, within in terms of police brutality and so forth. And so he's made this a cause, and Jerry is clearly not of a like mind on that part of it. And so how that all plays out to me is a really interesting part of week one, at the very least. And maybe it'll carry on beyond that.
Yeah, we shall see. But I see, Jerry wants it both ways. And by the way, you brought up Trump. I mean, this is going to be, we're sitting there, what, September, that first game, 2 months away from an election. This is just chum for Trump. I mean, he secretly might be, yeah, y'all get out there and kneel. Everybody, you know, I need y'all to do that, because he's just going to whip his followers into a frenzy, you know, because he uses that. Any chance he gets, he uses that as political. And I think he's realized the NBA is sort of so, you know, social issues aren't difficult for them. I mean, some people would argue they might have, you know, whiffed on China, but social issues over the years, they're just way more comfortable talking about it and everything. So I think Trump even kind of realizes, I'm not going to be able to stir up much interest ripping the NBA, because they're sort of good at that, and that's what they do. The NFL, Goodell over the years, and Jerry and other owners, Stephen Ross found out the other day. I had to laugh at Stephen Ross, the Miami owner. Did you see him? He was like, well, they were like, would you, if you'd have known now? He's like, no, I wouldn't have had that fundraiser. I've been called a racist. He's like, do you know what it's like to be called a racist out in public? And they're like, whatever. And he goes, I like some things President Trump's done, and I hate some things he's done.
Probably when we all saw what happened to Drew Brees.
Yes, who was absolutely, Brees had to come back the next day.
And like, there's not a more accomplished player other than Tom Brady in the entire NFL than Drew Brees.
No.
And so I think that,
and his own teammates turned on him in a heartbeat.
That's why I say it's an interesting dynamic in terms of Jerry and his players. We just saw it happen to the Saints and their quarterback in their own locker room. What happens if and a situation explodes like that within the Cowboys organization, well, and it's the top players against the owner.
Boy, that it could be fascinating. Well, we'll continue to talk about these things. And Ed, it's great to be with you. This was fun. We send our best thoughts. Frito Nation Productions. We hope Frito can, he has been, opening his eyes and trying to kind of react to some things. And so I would think the sound of our voices might kind of jolt him a little bit.
I was concerned when I saw they were playing, his brother said they were playing your radio show in his room.
You thought that might send him out the wrong direction? Yeah. Yeah, he put Norm's show on in the morning and then put my show in the afternoon. And then I gave him a little special shout out. So I don't know if that helped or hurt, but I understand that. You're very concerned. But thanks to Vocal, Ed, that's spelled VOKAL. And I like all the backdrop here. I've been mesmerized. The skyline of Dallas is behind us, and I'm mesmerized by this backdrop here. In fact, Ed, at some point when we can all kind of get back out together again, Meredith and I recently did a staycation in downtown, and we found a bunch of rooftop situations. So,
are you inviting me out?
We'll take you and Jill out.
That'd be lovely.
Yeah, no, just Jill. You can't come. We're going to do it while you're on the road. But thank you. Vocal stepped in, and they're going to help us immensely. And they're great friends with Frito and Frito Nation Production. They've all worked together. So this has been as seamless as possible during a very difficult time. It is the Doomsday Podcast. Mosley and Werder together again in the same studio. I'll give you the final word, Ed.
Well, I'll be in L.A. for the opener and the opening of the new stadium with no fans. I'll be there for week one. We'll see how everything plays out, and we'll report back.
Let's do that. Even if we have to do it
via
Zoom.
Probably be a long-distance thing. You're okay on long-distance romances, aren't you?
I'm usually better in long-distance relationships. I think Meredith would like to give it a try. This is the Doomsday Podcast. Thanks for everybody that's been a part of that. Thank you for our fine sponsors, my bookie, everyone else who has been a part of this thing. An extremely good time to be talking Cowboys. And again, we are now only, what is today, 31st? We're 14 days away? Less than two weeks away from that first game in the new stadium in Los Angeles. All right. Good night, everybody.